Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast. Three women, one podcast, and a whole load of badass with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. This week, we're talking about strong women. What makes one, and is it time to retire the phrase? Plus, we meet the amazing Laura Dodsworth. You might have seen her work. She's the woman who photographed 100 vulvas. We talked to her about why she did it and how the project has changed her sex life.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4!
So, 2019, Emma, what does it mean to you to be a strong woman?
Do you know what? I'm not a big fan of the word strong. Because I think for a long time, we've been thinking that equality is about us being fitting in with masculinity. So it's like we've had this sort of one-dimensional culture that says a certain thing is leading and successful, and that's about being strong. And I'm like, why can't we define ourselves? You said it earlier, you went brilliant women. I was like, yeah, why are we not just called brilliant women? Why do we have to be strong? Why is it to be successful? We've got to put some kind of masculine term in front of it. Why can't we just be feminine and badass?
Nat, do you like the term strong women?
Yes, and I'm a strong woman, and I don't know why you've got a problem with it. What is wrong? Why are we just rejecting all forms of normal words that have just been in the dictionary for a really long time?
No,
I can be a strong woman. I can also be a vulnerable woman. I can also be crazy woman.
Why can't you just be a brilliant woman?
But I'm that too. Thank you very much. And badass.
I don't want to be a strong woman.
There's nothing wrong with being a strong woman. Let's calm down.
I've just looked up strong. Having the power to move heavy weights or perform other physically demanding tasks.
Yeah, I can do that.
Able to withstand
doing
force,
a half marathon
pressure
tomorrow.
Or wear.
Yeah, do that.
That's it. So why are we using the word strong? It doesn't even fit.
Well, luckily, our next guest has created a whole series in the Metro around strong women. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us. Natalie Morris.
Well, obviously, she's got a great name. So.
So you can see we're a bit divided about the concept of strong women. What does it mean for you?
Well, so my series, Strong Women, which is on metro.co.uk, is basically about redefining what it means to be strong. So it's kind of about reclaiming the label, and one of you said that that it's a masculine term, and I don't necessarily think that that's true. I think that strength can be something that's feminine as well, and I think that that is something that we have kind of decided for ourselves that we associate only with men. Mm-hmm. I think that's why so many women shy away from the idea of being strong, using the word strong, and also, doing, physical activity for one. Like, I think there's so many women who will shy away from going in the weights room or doing anything that they see as masculine, because that's what we've been taught, because they don't want to appear as too manly or butch. And I think that what my series is doing is looking at these women who are kind of reclaiming it for themselves and deciding for themselves what it means to be strong physically and mentally and emotionally and in every kind of element of their lives.
So I love the word strong, but I also feel slightly divided by it because I felt like I spent a lot of my early life, probably up to my kind of late 20s, early 30s, being strong. So I was
I had to be strong to deal with life. I couldn't show any weakness. I could never admit anything was wrong. I had to get on with everything. It was important to be really strong. Mm-hmm. And what inevitably happened with that was that I broke. Because you can't be strong forever. That's just not life. You know, at some point, we all have to kind of have a moment where we go,
I'm not
strong now.
But you're taking strong as binary.
But that's the thing, right? Which is,
not binary.
So how do we start to see it as, because it is binary, you're strong or you're weak, right?
No.
So how do we start to see it differently? Natalie, I'm asking. Yeah.
Well, I think there is strength in vulnerability and strength in admitting your weaknesses. And there is strength in asking for help. I don't think strength necessarily means you have to do everything on your own, not ask for help, you know, put on this mask or this veneer and pretend everything's fine. And I think that in order to reclaim this idea of strength as women, it's about showing that there isn't one kind of strength and that there is, you know these things, there's strength in numbers. And I think that's very true for the kind of, I suppose the more feminine idea of strength is that there's strength in, you know, in groups of women coming together, helping each other out, admitting when they need help. And I think that is a huge thing. A lot of the women I've spoken to in this series have talked about like these huge struggles they've come through, and their turning points to finding their inner strength was a lot of the time admitting when they were at their lowest point, whether that was depression or dealing with grief or bankruptcy and all these different obstacles that these women have overcome. They said that the strongest point when they decided to come to the other side of it and realize just what they had inside them was the moment they accepted that, and they knew that they admitted to themselves they didn't have to pretend anymore, and they asked for help, and they did something about it. Their strength was saying, okay, this is going wrong, I can't cope with this anymore, what am I going to do about it? And I think that's where the real strength comes in.
Natalie, tell us a bit more about this series. I know I've challenged you on calling it strong, but I think anything that's profiling brilliant women is brilliant. But can you tell me a bit more about how it's come about and why you wanted to have this particular angle on strong women?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I completely get where you're coming from as well with the label of strong. And I do want to challenge the idea that we have to be strong. It's not necessarily about that. But what this series is about is looking at, and it is really in terms of kind of physical and mental strength, but really with a focus on like fitness and activity, which I know is something that doesn't come naturally to so many women, especially as we get older, when we get into adult life, we have children. It's something that becomes secondary, and it's so important. And basically, I think there's a huge kind of fear that puts women off being active, going to the gym, doing sport, whatever it is. And I think a lot of that comes down to a fear of judgment and a fear of being, you know, not being perceived in the way they want to be. So, you know, 75% of women are being put off from being active because of fear of being judged. And that only increases when you get into different, you know, minorities of women. When you talk to BAME women, Asian women, Black women, only 21% of Asian women are hitting the recommended levels of fitness that they should be. And I think a lot of that is down to the perception that we have and the advertising and the materials that are out there. We're not seeing the strong women who are overweight. We're not seeing the strong women who are older or who have disabilities or who have children and are fitting it in and around the school. And we don't see them. They're not on social media. They're not on the big posters and the adverts. So you get this kind of idea that in order to be fit and strong and to love your body, you have to be, you know, a size 6 Instagram model clad in Lycra. And if you're not that, that's somehow wrong or shameful, and you don't get to be strong, you don't get to be fit. And what I want to do is really redefine what it means to be strong and to challenge the norms that we've really taken on.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? I feel like gyms have become the new nightclubs. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like gyms are very intimidating places, and there's a lot of time and money spent on outfits and looks rather
Definitely.
Than actually, let's just go down the gym, do some exercises and then leave. So
yeah, well, I think it's become really gentrified as well. It's become like the new cool thing. Everyone wants to spend all their money on these like fancy studios and boutique spinning classes. And I just want to take out the kind of elitism of it and make it you know, make women realize that it is accessible and there's something that it's really important and something that everyone can and should be doing, really.
I think there's also something really interesting in showing women who are not, I don't want to use the word succeeding, who don't look as we would imagine somebody who is a physically strong woman to look. Because so last year I did this stupid injury to my foot that then turned out to be the biggest pain in the neck, and the poor girls have had to hear about it for basically a year. It's like just very annoying. And it became a much bigger mental struggle for me to walk to the tube station than it had ever been to go to a gym class. And I'd been like congratulating myself on like going to a boxing class, going to a spin class, that I was this super strong woman who could go and do that. And suddenly I found myself in a position where actually the real strength was being able to walk to the shop or say, actually, I don't want to go out today, but I have to, so I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And there's, I don't think that we talk about that enough when we talk about women's physicality, that actually it's not about, can you do this thing that somebody has put on a pedestal is an amazing, difficult thing to do. It's, can you do the thing that feels difficult for your life right now?
Yeah, completely, completely. It's all relative, you know. No one's saying you have to be able to do an ultra marathon and that's the reason that makes you a fit, strong woman. That's not it at all. And it's exactly what you say. It's about overcoming your own personal challenges, doing something that takes you out of your own comfort zone and something that you can be proud of individually, whether that is, you know, taking the stairs in your office instead of getting the lift, or whether that is signing up for a half marathon. Whatever your level, whatever you're at, I think that's the key thing. And it is about finding, you know, where you fit on that scale, and there isn't one, you know, tick box strength category for everyone. So definitely about finding and also finding what you love as well, because I think so many women get caught up in this idea that fitness is about weight loss and it's about keeping your body looking a certain way and you have to do it and it becomes a chore, and that just sucks the fun out of it and it sucks the life out of it. And I think if you can find something that you actually enjoy, it completely changes the dynamic and your relationship with fitness altogether, because I think so many people also developed quite a negative relationship with fitness from PE at school, and they had a horrible time and they didn't want to bring their kit to school and it was awful, and you know, and you have to get changed and there are boys and it's horrible. And I think people carry that into adulthood, and it's such a shame when there are so many different things that you could be doing. You know, you can be playing sport with your mates, you can go to classes, you can do stuff in your living room.
This is where, you know, I don't want to knock the shininess of the gym. Because actually, if it wasn't for the shininess, and I'm looking at Emma here, if it wasn't for the shininess of the gym, I wouldn't have got into fitness a few years ago. And my physicality, my mental health, everything is so much better as a result. Because for me, going to a gym that literally was weights and some running machines didn't appeal. Actually, the experience of music and being able to make it something that I can do with my friends, and actually having that gloss appeal works for someone like me. And from that, I started running. And from running, you know, and I'm doing a half marathon tomorrow. And I'm a below average runner. I will be in the back. I'm always like in the last percentile of all of the runners in all of my races. But I don't race to win. I'm just running. And as long as I put one foot in front of the other, it's okay. And so I don't think we should be knocking anything. I don't think anything's binary, in the same way that I think it's okay to say strong. And in saying strong, it doesn't imply weak. Ultimately, we should just be celebrating the fact that women do things in completely different ways. And as long as we're moving forward and as long as we know how to get back up after some kind of struggle, then we're winning. But I feel like we're starting to knock things or be anti things.
I don't think we are. I think where we've got to is a place where we have started to see the elitism that sits in a lot of that. So
elitism and commerciality go hand in hand.
But that's a reality, right?
And which so is for you.
You can afford to go to a lovely glossy gym. But if you're somebody on a low income who can't afford to go to a lovely glossy gym.
No, that's not true, because community gyms are just as glossy and just as affordable.
No, come
yes,
on. You've been to a community gym. They're not.
They are.
They're not.
If you go to your local leisure centre, you're not getting the full...
You're not getting the laundry.
I live in Newham, one of the poorest boroughs, and And I've got to say, our local gyms are really, really
good.
I live in Hammersmith, one of the richest boroughs. And let me tell you, it ain't that glossy at the council gym. It's very nice. They've got great equipment. They're lovely people. They look after you. But it's not the same experience.
I think those gyms are perfectly fine. But again, it goes perfectly fine. They're perfectly fine.
Perfectly
and the classes
fine.
Are great. The music's
different.
Great. No, they've got spin studios.
But you just said you wouldn't go to one because it wasn't glossy enough for you.
I wouldn't go to...
You just said that.
I wouldn't go to
you
one.
Just said that.
I wouldn't go to one that didn't offer those sorts of services. So I wouldn't go to one that didn't offer me bikes and music and instructors that encourage you or instructors that didn't look like I wanted to look. I wouldn't.
Absolutely. But and that's
most,
fine. But there's
most
an understanding
gyms
there's
aren't
an elitism
that
within that.
A commercial elitism.
Yeah, there is.
I think what you're saying is totally valid. But what I'm getting from this is that you've just got to find what works for you. And like, I love a fancy class. Like I will spend my money on some ridiculous brunch with my friends and then go to this, you know, 20, 30 pound spinning class because it's fancy and shiny. And I love that. But again, like, it's not accessible to everyone. If you don't live in London, if you don't have a certain amount of money, you can't do that. And I think it doesn't mean that those classes are bad. I love that they exist. I'm a big fan, but also you want to be able to, the mums who don't have a Sunday to go and, you know, go off and book an hour for this class and all these different people, you want it to just be that they can find whatever works for them. So like if you love those classes, but also you love, you know, you're doing a half marathon tomorrow, that's amazing. You know, if you can do both, then that's great. And so it's definitely not about knocking anything. It's just about making it accessible and making it a thing that all women can do and at a level that they find enjoyable, really.
Natalie, what has been some of the reader response to this? Because I'm thinking about a story that wasn't in the Metro, it was in the US a few weeks ago, and it is a woman who is, I would say, sort of a size 16-ish, but she is very, very fit. She's an ultramarathon runner, extremely fit. But she says every time she posts anything about her fitness or anytime she goes out for a run, she has abuse hurled at her. But they say, you know, you shouldn't be running. What are you doing? If you were really an ultra marathon runner, you'd be losing weight. All these things. And she posted this fantastic post, which featured her lifting some incredibly heavy weights while eating Cheetos, which was my favorite thing ever. I wonder if, you know, the aspiration that we all understand what it means to be a strong woman, it doesn't matter what you look like, is there. But the reality is we judge people based on their externals.
I think we definitely do, 100%. And I see that in anything any woman posts online ever. That's the first response. And I think that is definitely at the forefront of my mind with this series, and it's something that, like, we really need to tackle, because we have to get away from this idea that strength is tied up completely with aesthetics. I think that's completely misguided, and we're just wrong on a lot of it. And, you know, particularly around a lot of the stuff around weight and saying that if you're a certain weight, that means you're, you know, instantly unhealthy. I don't think that's true at all. And the woman who was in my first article is, I think she's maybe a size 18 or 20, and she is a wild swimmer. She goes out swimming, and she's, you know, she said she doesn't have any illusions that she's the best swimmer out there, but she says she's strong and that she, you know, she does distances that I can only dream of. And I think what she says, she gets comments like that all the time of people assuming she can't do something or assuming she's not going to be very good because of how she looks. And that's something we really need to step away from, because it's just not the reality. But, you know, we're always going to get trolls whenever we post online. That is just how it works, and I don't know how we're going to get away from that, to be honest. Seems very ingrained.
Oh, one day maybe. Natalie, thank you so much for joining us. Natalie Morris, senior lifestyle writer at the Metro. Her series on strong women is up now. Do go check it out, metro.co.uk. Coming up next, have you been watching Shipwrecked? If so, we're going to be talking to Big T. You'll be hearing all about her story from childhood to now. She is next here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Welcome to the studio, the fabulous Laura Dodsworth, photographer extraordinaire, author of a new book, Womanhood, The Bare Reality, which is a, let's call this, large photo journal of 100 women's I'm going to say vulvas.
Well done.
Say that. Yes,
exactly. They are vulvas. Yes.
Laura, tell us first of all, how did the project come about?
Well, it's the third in a series. Although I have to say, I never thought I'd do this. So first of all, I photographed and interviewed 100 women about breasts. And then after that, I thought, hang on, I need to get to know men better. So I photographed and interviewed 100 men about their manhood and their manhood. And after I did that, The Guardian described me as a champion for penises and men. And I thought, this is really interesting. Here I am, a card-carrying feminist, and I'm a champion for penises. How did this happen? And I realised I really wanted to do the same thing for women. I read about a report about FGM in the UK, made me feel really sick. And I read about girls as young as 9 going to their doctors to ask about labiaplasty. And I just thought, no, you know, how have we come to this, that we've got such unrealistic ideas about how we look? So, yeah, I set out to photograph 100 women's vulvas just to show what real vulvas look like, because I think a lot of young women these days are comparing themselves to internet porn. That's the point of reference if you Google. And to talk to them about what their vulvas and vaginas mean to them, because they're quite definitive parts of our bodies and our lives as women. And that's where the idea came from, crazy as it is.
What was it? Okay, first of all, how did you find 100 women who signed up to this?
Actually, that wasn't hard. I thought it would be, because when I pitched this to my publishers, they said, it's a great idea, Laura, but really, are you going to find 100 women? And it's one of those moments. I wanted to be really confident because I wanted the commission. I was like, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And inside I was thinking, oh my God, I'm never going to find them. It wasn't too bad. I think because it's my third project, there's a bit of trust. But I really think right now there's something going on in the culture. You know, we're in the wake of Me Too, and there's always stuff about reproductive rights in the media. There's more about period poverty. I just think at the moment there's a lot coming up, and it feels like a really, really good time for women's stories, women reclaiming their body. And I just put out some different call outs, different women's groups. I sent out emails. I did some social media requests, and I got 100 women really quickly.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was it for you? I mean, obviously you've been photographing various body parts for a while now, but how did it feel for you to be doing that?
Well, it felt different to photographing men. Mm-hmm. Both done, you know, really professionally and sensitively, I should just say, because people might be wondering what this is like. It's all in a studio. Honestly, it did feel a bit awkward. I felt a bit self-conscious to begin with, the first shoots, because it's really intimate. It's really vulnerable. You know, our vulvas are very tucked away, aren't they? You only see them if you're in a medical context or with a lover. And so for me to be kneeling in front of a woman photographing her vulva did feel really intimate and vulnerable. But I felt like my job's just to make sure they feel okay. Honestly, by the time I got to 100, really, really blasé. But I photographed myself, I'm in it. And I tested my setup on myself probably about 20 times. And the first time I took my own picture, I felt a bit self-conscious.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who probably even haven't looked at theirs. You know, because it takes quite a lot of effort to get a view down there, doesn't it, really?
Totally. I mean, a lot of women hadn't ever looked at themselves before. If you want to look at yourself, you've got to kind of do an awkward bum shuffle up to a mirror, haven't you? I mean, it's tricky. It's tricky to get a good angle and light on it. So even if women had looked at themselves before, when they looked at themselves on the back of my camera, for a lot of women, this was quite a big moment. You know, their hands were shaky, and somehow I became the vulva expert, and women were asking me if they were normal.
Wow.
You know, some women were really quite nervous about it.
I just want to ask you about the title of the book, Womanhood. Mm. And just in terms of with a lot of the women's marches, there was a lot of outcry about talking about women and talking about body parts. And with the title of the book, Womanhood, and the fact that you've got vaginas in there, are there any transgender vaginas in the book, vulvas in the book?
Yes, there are. Right, I was thinking about this because you are not the first person to ask me. But I tell you something that's interesting. When I brought out Manhood, my second book, nobody asked me.
Wow, okay.
Nobody asked me about this at all. And I think this brings me to a bigger point, which is that women's bodies are much more contested and much more policed. Mm-hmm. Women having agency about their bodies is much more interrogated. So yes, it's called Womanhood. You have to give the title artistic license. This is a conversation about what it means to be a woman. But all my work in all my work, I really like to bring in a lot of different voices to make the conversation interesting. So there's a post-operative transsexual woman. That is how she describes herself. There are also two non-binary women. And that's also another interesting angle to bring in. But yeah, there's a lot of different types of sexualities, ideas about gender and women from all different backgrounds in there.
What was the debate when you released Manhood, talking about manhood? Did it automatically go to toxic masculinity, or was it a different conversation? Because I think it's interesting, the questions that you're asked around womanhood. I think it's partly because as women asking, we're hopefully more curious, more inquiring, and more sensitive to everyone else. But I'm keen to know, what did people say about manhood?
I think, what a terribly interesting question. No one's asking that. I think you're right. Actually, and at the time, there was conversation about toxic masculinity then. You know, that was when that came out, there was all the pussy grabbing stuff. Mm-hmm. And so people were asking me about that. And it's a very soft, vulnerable book. Mm-hmm. I think in general, in general, men don't talk about their inner world in the same way women do. And so some of the topics in womanhood might not be as surprising as manhood, because in manhood, you're like, whoa, I've never heard men talk like this before. Mm. It was very intimate, very vulnerable. And the conversations went more along, you know, people talking about mental health and toxic masculinity. And I think with womanhood, although, you know, we know as women that we're going to bring up conversations like periods or...
I'm just going to apologise for anyone who heard the kind of P word there. We're just going to... keep it on vagina.
Sorry, that was what it was.
That is what it was called. Yes, and we didn't start that. That was started by the President of the United States, so blame him. Send your letters to Ofcom to him. Thanks.
Apologies. There were quotation marks around when I said it.
Sorry about that.
So in womanhood, I think what's a lot more controversial is that the vulva is often contextualised just as sexual. Mm. Yeah, you know, if you mm-hmm. Google, you are going to find sexual content. And what's radical about this is that women are sharing the pictures and the stories on their own terms. So they talk about everything that comes up. Mm. And that's what's a bit more controversial this time. It's that agency and ownership.
Mm. Across the book, is there a general theme of the women in the book loving their lady gardens? I would like to hope that they were loving their lady gardens. Were there a lot of love for them, or was it a bit mixed?
I think there's a real mix. There are women in there who don't like what they've got. There's a woman in there who had labiaplasty. Her story is super interesting. There are women who are a bit like, I don't really care what it looks like. It does what I need it to. It feels very good. And there are women who are like, oh my goodness, she's so pretty. And they loved looking at the picture. So there's a real mixture, because, you know, there's no singular female experiences there. Mm. Women, there was a total range. And there were women who'd never looked before, and women who were very familiar with how they looked.
The thing that I noticed was how much, and we've had this conversation before, how much hair there was in that area. I'm of a generation where Hollywood's is the
all
thing.
Off.
All off. Or Brazilians, pretty much all off, versus landing strip. So opening, I was like, there's a lot of hair here. I know Emma's a full bush fan.
No, hang on. I'm just like, hang on.
Hairstyles outed.
I mean, you know, there's topiary
she said it on the,
going
on. The radio
on. There's it's not wild down there. Just for any. No,
but it's the first thing I noted. I was like, oh, and you said that's one of the things that you noted as well. And so maybe maybe there is a resurgence in people reclaiming their hair.
I think so. So when I started, I was like, oh my goodness, if everybody's bare, I don't feel like that's a good message that needs to be mixed. So I grew my... are there any words I can't say? I grew quite a fulsome bush, let's say, because I thought, you know, I've got to do the feminist thing here, and like, there's got to be somebody with hair. And actually, there was a lot more hair than I thought, and I feel quite hopeful about that. I feel like in general, women are feeling, you know, they're making more of a real choice about what they want. I hope. I think there are a few younger women who feel more under pressure to be bare, because they'd feel like boys would, young men would criticise them or talk to their mates about them if they didn't. But there was more hair than I was expecting. I think there's a real mix when you look at the pictures.
Oh. Well, we're going to keep talking to Laura after the break. Particularly, Laura, I'm going to ask you about what it feels like to be mansplained about vulvas on Twitter.
Oh, let's go there.
We're going to be talking about that. Plus, I want to hear about some of the amazing stories in the book. There's one woman who had vulval cancer that it's just incredible stories. All of that coming up here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Laura, before the break, I said I wanted to talk to you about mansplaining on Twitter. Now, this week on Twitter, The Guardian wrote an article about your book and it blew up into a huge Twitter controversy. And that was because The Guardian published this tweet with something saying 100 vulvas. One woman publishes a book about them, something like that. And a man retweeted it with, "I think you'll find that should be vagina." For anyone who is not clear, first of all, give us the official definition of a vulva and a vagina. What are we talking about?
Oh, you've asked the right person. Okay, so
yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, I didn't photograph vaginas. I'd have needed an endoscope. The vagina is the muscular tube. It's the birth canal. It's the bit you'd put a penis into. The vulva is the external part. So labia, clitoris, the opening to the urethra. That's where you wee from. It's the whole of the external part, the vulva. That's what I photographed. When he tweeted that, I wasn't surprised. I was expecting some tweets along those lines. I wasn't really going to get involved. Yeah, but the thing is, in the book, you know, women are talking about their vulvas and their vaginas. And a lot of people do use the word quite interchangeably. They say vagina because there's a lot of embarrassment about what to call it. I mean, one thing I asked every woman is, what do you call it? And a lot of women actually just try to avoid a word at all, or they use some kind of euphemism. So, yeah, that really blew up. It was quite funny. But then, you know, there's a film coming out on Tuesday called 100 Vaginas on Channel 4 based on the project. Please watch it Tuesday, 10 o'clock. Amazing. It is amazing. Yeah. There's never been anything like it on TV. And so then that comes out and people say to me, well, you said they're called vulvas and now the film's called 100 Vaginas. So I've kept quite quiet during the whole thing. But, you know, the fact is Channel 4 took the decision to call it that because that is the word in common parlance. So I had a bit of sympathy for that man. But it was the way he carried on, wasn't it? He just carried on.
He just couldn't let it go. Right, he could not let it go. Ladies, what do you call it?
Vagina.
Yeah, vagina. I call it vagina. Yeah, or lady garden.
Oh, you're so cute.
It is cute.
It's cute. Very cute. Laura, for most of the women taking part in this project, was it the first time they had sort of got up close and personal? And what was the... what were the emotions that came up for them within that?
This is a super emotional project. Out of my three projects, this brought up the most emotion. It did for the women and then it did for me. I think it's because for the women, the reveal was to themselves. So our vulvas are tucked away in our pants. You know, you don't see them. It's quite hard to see them. Like we're saying, it's an awkward bum shuffle up to a mirror if you want to have a look. To be confronted with the physical reality really opened up all the taboos that go alongside it, all the social and emotional taboos. It was so, the intimates were so emotional. I mean, there were some very, very funny stories, some extremely juicy stories. And then a lot of emotion came up. I mean, for instance, rape and assault. This felt so relevant in the wake of Me Too. I'd be talking to somebody about something really light, really funny, and then they'd just mention they'd been assaulted in the past, or, you know, a lot of it brought up all the big stuff.
So I have just finished reading a fantastic book called Vagina by Naomi Wolf. And in it, she talks about how actually a lot of our kind of neurons and nerves connect throughout our entire spine. So actually, because of how our vulvas and vaginas are situated, if they're abused, if we are raped, if they experience some level of violence, actually all those nerves are connected all the way back up to our brain. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge emotional connection that we don't talk about.
Yeah.
We don't think about. And I was saying last week that I attempt to talk about this a lot. I've talked about it a lot in the last couple of weeks. I run a sex course and we get women to actually look at their vaginas for the first time. And it brings up huge emotions for them, mostly because people haven't, because people tend to ignore it, because people tend to not think about it. And I just wonder if perhaps there is a piece of education that needs to happen at a much younger age where we stop feeling so ashamed of them.
Well, exactly. I mean, I honestly, if I'd seen this book when I was in my teens, I think my whole life would have been different. Mm. It'll sound dramatic, but it's not just looking at the pictures and knowing what people look like. There's this connection to our deep selves. It's going to sound really arty-farty, but the way it works is you take the photograph of the taboo part of the body, it opens up all of these big emotions and stories. I'm not surprised about what you're saying from those courses you go on, because that's kind of what I experienced when I interviewed these women. And I don't know about the science of what's in Naomi Wolf's book, Vagina. Amazing book, I read it too, but I get that kind of sense talking to women as well. And there's a way in which I experienced that personally. The process of creating this changed me in lots of ways, but one would be sexually. I'd say that I feel sexual pleasure differently and better since womanhood, because it made me confront things in myself. I can't promise everyone's going to have better orgasms.
But you never know.
They might do. I do.
Buy it and see.
Buy and see. It's worth a try, isn't it?
So the only thing, I agree with you, H, but the only thing I'm going to challenge on is I think the taboo is still nakedness. And so in varying forms, more so for women, obviously. And when we do see nakedness, it's either in humour, in protest, something, you know, someone running out on a football pitch, absolutely starkers. And so before we even start to say, know what your vulva looks like, or even know the difference between your vulva and your vagina and be okay with that, we need to confront our own ability to just look at our bodies, which is why I think it's brilliant that you started with breasts, because breasts are sexualized in a way that they can only ever be sexual, but actually they're really important because they keep babies alive too, or what's in them keeps babies alive. So I think it's a full kind of body deconstruction is that whole that we need to do, and I don't think you can do one from the other. I think it has to be the whole thing.
I think that's really interesting, and that's kind of how the projects evolved for me. I never thought I'd photograph 100 women's breasts. That was never a plan I did. And looking back, I'm not surprised I started there. Mm. In a way, there are most public, private parts. You know, you see tits everywhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But God, you mustn't show your... Sorry.
There's a lot of restrictions.
But you mustn't...
Are we not allowed to say that?
You know, before I came on, you probably should have run through the words with me. I didn't know.
We're allowed to say
I'm
boobs.
So we sorry. Boobs it's Saturday night and we've all got carried away. Apologies. Yes.
Beg your pardon. But I mean, there are most public private parts. You can see them everywhere. Billboards, you know, page 3, not that long ago. Mm-hmm. But you mustn't show your own. Mm. And then I can see how I progress to ultimately what is the most taboo body part. Mm. There isn't any part of the body that is as loved and lusted after, yet also feared, hated and controlled as the vulva and the vagina.
Mm. So gosh. So true. So true. Laura, within the book, we need to make clear, it's not just... it's not just pictures, they're also women's stories.
Yes.
One of the ones I said earlier that really got me was reading about a woman who has had vulvar cancer and how her relationship with that part of her body has changed because of it. Mm. What were the ones that stick out for you?
I love her story. I'm glad you brought her up, actually. And I want to say that although she's got a really, really sad story because of that, no one in the book is just a victim. She talks about how much she loves sex and how much she's had sex and it's been amazing since surgery. So, you know, there's light and shade with everybody. She stands out. I mean, I finished the book with an FGM survivor. I felt it was really important that somebody that survived FGM has the last word in this. And, you know, her last kind of rallying cry is hands off our vaginas. Mm-hmm. Her story is incredibly moving. There's a 77-year-old in there, and I'd like to order the kind of menopause she had. She said she's got, oh, God, I don't know if I can say this. She has an item she uses at home which goes like a lawnmower.
That's beautifully described, yes.
And, you know, she still loves masturbating and sex in her 70s. And I'm like, yes, that's I'll be having one of those menopauses. That sounds brilliant. There's a woman in there who's 47 and a virgin. You know, that's quite a standout story because for her, in a way, she was trying to reboot her life. By taking part, she's trying to really open up to me, but really to herself, to let herself be more vulnerable so she can open up to relationships. But, you know, that's kind of an unfair journalisty type question, Harriet, because, there's so many amazing stories in there. It's quite hard to pick favourites. I could keep going.
What are you going to do next?
I'm not quite sure, if I'm honest. I'm still in this. Looking back now, the three projects have taken me 5 years. Mm-hmm. I've photographed over 300 men and women about their bodies and their lives. It's been quite a long project. I'm really excited about this book being out now. I'm really excited about 100 Vaginas on Channel 4 on Tuesday. And then I'm not quite sure. I think I just need to land from this and see where I go next. But there are a few things that have come up for me in this project that I would definitely be interested in exploring more. That would be female pleasure. Obviously, that kind of links on from this.
Yeah, well, now you know how to up your orgasms. Just take lots of photographs. So, definitely start exploring that.
I've got a few ideas, but, well, watch this space. I'm not sure, really.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. Fabulous Laura Dodsworth, her book Womanhood is out now. And 100 Vaginas is on Channel 4 at 9 p.m. on Tuesday. Is that right?
10 p.m.
10 p.m. on Tuesday. Laura, we have loved chatting to you. Thank you so much for coming in. Apologies if some of the language from both Laura and myself was not entirely on it. Although, I'm going to say most of that language was created by men. So, guys, if it offends you,
exactly,
that's on you. 1, 2, 3, 4. This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.